It's in here somewhere.
You know, there is an easier way to read your energy meter.
Yeah?
Yeah. Eon's new self-reading smart meters. They automatically send us your reading for you.
Really?
Really. And lets you know the exact cost of the energy you've used.
Even better. So no more...
unpleasant surprises?
New self-reading smart meters from Eon. Search Eon tomorrow. Tomorrow is on. Eligibility criteria, terms and conditions apply.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Off the Post. I'm Russ Cullen. We've got Anthony Mangione. And how are you?
Doing good, Russell. How are you?
Good. We've got a full night of action. We're going to welcome in Mike Augello right away. Mike, how are you?
Good evening, gentlemen. I am well.
I want to let people know at the fan shop we're going to have the It's Okay to Win Mike t-shirts on sale soon. So I just want to tell people look out for that.
Yeah. And when you buy it, I'll make sure I wipe my butt with it.
Okay. We appreciate that. And we'll he's got a little Bill Peters in him because clearly Bill Peters wants Eddie Lack to make a save or make a timely save.
No, he didn't have a lack of opinion on the matter.
No. Sounds like Eddie Lack may not be around next year if he doesn't make the next timely save.
He may
save.
Be lacking an NHL gig at this rate.
Yeah. Yeah. I do want to say we're not going to – go ahead.
No, Bill Peters is lacking in appreciation of –
We're gonna empty the bucket on as many bad jokes as we can this evening after that little display.
Yeah, there's no question about that. I do want to say we're not gonna troll Josh Hosang about the number choice. I don't understand all of it.
Nah,
who cares?
Please.
It's ridiculous. No. Leave the kid alone. Let him play a little bit. I mean, God.
Yeah. See, I personally think it's a disgrace that somebody wore number 99 after Rick Dudley.
Oh, boy. Okay. Steering this ship in the right direction, what we're going to do a little round table, and we'll just give our opinion on some of these trades. I'm not going to talk about the AHL ones, but we'll go around with some of them. We'll start off easy on this one. My opinion on the Drew Stafford for a conditional sixth, that was a gift. Good trade for the Bruins. Ant, what's your thought on that?
Yeah, it's a good little little addition there to add to, for Boston's push here. I like Stafford as a depth, certainly as a depth forward, but you know he's your at this point now in terms of production wise, he's a guy you can kind of plug. He's your classic plug in rental guy, that you can count on for solid two way play. Maybe he'll pop in a goal here or there, but certainly not a trade that, if that's offered, you take it, especially in Boston's case.
Okay, Mike?
The price was next to nothing. Stafford, when he was traded from Buffalo to Winnipeg, did very well in that. I believe that was the year that Winnipeg made the playoffs. So he's got some ability. He can play top nine role, and you gave up a sixth-round pick. I think that's a pretty good move.
Okay,
yeah.
We're going to move on. We're not going to talk about the Frankie Corrado trade because it's boring. But we are going to talk about the it's
oh, come
boring,
on, Mike.
It might
you
be
at
exciting.
Least give Mike the opportunity. You have to
All
give
right.
Mike
go
the
ahead,
opportunity
Mike.
To address it.
Go
Mike,
ahead.
Go ahead.
Sure. I mean, this is the trade that basically backed up what I've been saying that the Leafs were going to do all year. So of course you want to skip that. No, I mean. They take home $2 million in Eric Fair's contract, which is basically a contract that they're going to expose in the expansion draft, and to take the $2 million off the table so Pittsburgh could fit in another contract, they get a fourth-round pick, exactly what I thought Lamoriello was going to do, and they at least recouped the second-round pick that they threw away on Brian Boyle.
It's like you were in Lou's office. Okay. The next one. The next one, we've got the Ottawa Senators trading Curtis Lazar and Thor, Mike Koska, to the Calgary Flames for Jokke Puokka, which, by the way, at 8:30 in the morning, I could not pronounce. And I think, interesting
me.
Trade. Listen, at 8:30 in the morning, they're lucky I'm up.
That's
interesting
true.
Trade. I think Lazar got rushed. but I think he still has a future. He's got good speed. He could definitely score a little bit. But even if he just comes back as sort of an energy guy, I think this was a worthwhile trade for Calgary. And I think, look, Ottawa, anytime you can get a defenseman who can move the puck a little bit and show a little bit of offense, that's a smart deal. So I like it. Ant?
Yeah, I like the deal from both ends. I know, I mean, somebody look at Yoki Pocket and say he's not really a difference maker, but I do like, I think he's got a chance to give Ottawa a little bit of offensive flexibility in terms of being able to move the puck up the ice. From flipping the other way, Lazar just got rushed too soon. He really did.
Yeah.
And that's always the danger here, I think, for a lot of teams. I think cautionary tale for a lot of teams who really want to rush young players into the NHL. Calgary seems like the right organization for him to land in, at least in the meantime. He'll play in the AHL, and he'll get an opportunity at a certain point here to be able to. And he seems to fit within the scheme that the Flames are playing. So I like actually the deal from – it was one of those things where I actually like the deal from both ends because, again, Ottawa is really – their theme right now is they're making the postseason push right now, trying to ensure a playoff berth, and that kind of kept within that theme.
Mike?
I think Yogi Paca is an NHL defenseman. I think he'll be a bottom-pairing guy. I saw him play with Texas in the AHL, and I thought he was pretty good. I think Lazar needed a change of scenery. Clearly, as you both said, he was rushed. But I think you could tell by the enthusiasm that he had in going to Calgary. There's not going to be a lot of expectation, a lot of pressure on him, and I think that's a good thing for him. So I think it's a good deal for both teams. And by the way, at 8:30, I can barely say Russ Cohen.
Which I can understand.
And somehow on my regular gig, I have to be actually in the process of speaking. So, but gig.
You're used to that. All right. So the next one, this one's going to be a little lengthy. We're not going to get into the crazy money part of it, but the Lightning trade Valtteri Filppula to the Flyers for Streit, and Streit gets moved to the Penguins, and yada yada yada. Now, the interesting thing about this one is just what I thought was going to happen happened. And that is, so tonight Mark Streit scores for Pittsburgh, and Flyers fans are pissed off. And it makes me laugh. It makes me laugh because even on Sirius today and talking to Gord Stellick, who was a former GM, he is unsure whether Hextall knew he was going to get flipped or not and whether the conversation ever happened between Yzerman and Hextall, but we don't really know.
No, he did. In this circumstance, what was the condition of the extra pick?
Mm-hmm.
Russ, the condition of the extra pick was if he was going to get traded a second time within that period.
But he didn't know probably to Pittsburgh. That's the only thing.
No, but again, you have no control over it, but he knew he was going to get flipped to a contender. You knew he was at the minimum going to get flipped to a contender. So
but
at least
Pittsburgh.
Had that. To Pittsburgh. I get that. But let's, again, and I like Mark Streit, but again, Pittsburgh is sort of a perfect spot for him to land in many ways.
It is.
It mirrors the. It mirrors the deal for not quite the same in terms of the assets in return, but it certainly mirrors what happened with Kimmo Tiimonen previously. So he was going to be lost to the Flyers anyway. They weren't going to be bringing him back anyway. Again, Flyer fans love Flyer fans, but you know what? They will get mad if you at some of the most minor things. And again,
they saw the Streit picture.
They saw
the Streit picture of him posing in the Penguins jersey so they could show it like on the Jumbotron, and they got mad.
Right. Yeah, and they got mad. And fans got mad at him. It's like, it's one of those things that's just like, guys, you were losing in this offseason anyway. The fact that you got assets. You had three assets in return for him, which is way more than I thought they would get. Granted, one was a fourth-round pick, but you actually got in return a useful player. The minute I heard that Valtteri Filppula was included in the deal, as much as every Flyer fan decided to start losing their mind over this, oh, my God, how can you get three out of $5 million, at $5 million cap hit for next year? I'm sorry. Let's go check that free agent market and see who's available this offseason, who you won't have to commit a multiple-year deal to, who actually addresses one of the exact areas of need that your team has, which is center, because beyond Claude Giroux, who's having a down year, and Sean Couturier, you have very little center depth, ready NHL-ready center depth in the system. You have an NHL-level center. Granted, he only has 7 goals. It's not his job necessarily to be scoring goals. There's 2 parts to scoring goals, the distributor and the goal scorer. You need someone who's actually capable of doing that. And guess what? Filppula is capable of that. We watched that last night. Several good bursts into the offensive zone against a pretty a pretty good Florida team. He was active. He engaged pretty quickly with his with Jake Voracek and his line and Braden Schenn. And you actually got a useful thing. The problem is a lot of cases with Flyer fans, and I'm going off here, is that, again, it's going back in Philadelphia right now with this whole tank mentality. They wanted the team to completely go through the floor and not make the postseason because it's pointless to go play against the Capitals and lose in round one again. You know what? It's still an opportunity, for players to at least get, you know, continue to get their you know, get their opportunities to play in the postseason. And, you know, at the end of the day, you address a need, and he's at the minimum, Valtteri Filppula is a stopgap. At the minimum, he's a stopgap. And at the end of the next year, you're only committed to at $5 million for one more year on his deal. So in my mind, I thought it was a win for the fact that the Flyers actually got a useful part and draft picks in exchange for a 39-year-old defenseman who is slowing down. He will fit in very well in Pittsburgh because they have enough depth in their system or enough depth on their blue line that they can actually shelter him and keep him in that specific role that he does best. Streit's a good defenser for what he does, but he is limited at this point as to what he can do.
All fair points. I totally agree. Mike?
Well, I think Yzerman got what he wanted. He got cap relief because he needs to sign Drouin, Palat, and maybe Johnson next in the summer. We know that Rutherford got the defenseman that he needed. I mean, honestly, the thing that I look at with Filppula, because of the rumor that happened a few days before this trade where supposedly he blocked a trade to Toronto, I think he blocked a trade to Toronto because he thought he was going to probably end up on the Toronto Marlies, where Brooks Like and Colin Greening are this year, as a guy that they bring on just for expansion exposure, and then they put him down in the minors. Now, in Philadelphia, he's going to get an opportunity. And maybe with Hackstall, he fits in better with their scheme. But I think Toronto would have taken on that $5 million contract just to get the draft pick and would have buried him. So I don't know how much is left with Valtteri Filppula. So I'm not sure Hackstall is the one who got the most out of this deal. He got something, but I think the other two teams got the better of what they wanted.
Okay. All right, so now this next one, I'm going to read off two trades because it's sort of like a yin and a yang. Columbus trades Dylan Hetherington to the Stars for Lauri Korpikoski, and then Columbus trade Dalton Proud to the Devils for Kyle Quincy. So the first part of it is I like the Stars getting Hetherington. He's a big defenseman. He has toughness. He could skate a little bit, could show a little bit of offense at times. Korpikoski, look, he wasn't going to help them this year. He'll help Columbus in their stretch drive, and he's a smart player, but Dallas got a defenseman. Smart. Now, the interesting part of this next one is New Jersey gives up Quincy for Dalton Prout. I don't get it. New Jersey wants to get tougher. Like, Dalton Prout to me just seems like he's barely an NHLer, and Columbus gets a guy with playoff experience in Quincy, so I get why they feel like they could trade Hetherington at that point because they got an experienced guy. So Columbus, big win. I'm not sure what New Jersey did there, Ant, but go ahead. What do you think?
No, I concur. I think it was kind of an odd – when I saw the Quincy deal, it was a bit of a head-scratcher in terms of – Prout is, to me, at this point of his career, he's kind of a he's very much a depth guy in the NHL, much as you said. And for a team like Columbus, he's going to be a useful part who's got plenty of experience, can move the puck – certainly move the puck a little bit and allow – Columbus to continue to have puck pressure. But again, it was a very odd deal. And I do, again, Hetherington's a nice prospect. I agree. Again, not much more that I can say about him that you've already addressed. So again, that was my view on things there.
Okay. Mike?
with Dallas, I mean, they have a lot of young defensemen. So, I mean, Hetherington would just be in the mix for them, and Korpikoski and Quincy going to Columbus and just furthers the depth that Tortorella can use in the playoffs. The funny thing is, I was listening to the Devils broadcast yesterday, and they were, you know, extolling the virtues of Dalton Prout as this young defenseman. And I'm like, he's 26 years old. He's not exactly. It's not like he's 19 coming out of the OHL. He's 26, and he's
not a great defenseman either.
Yeah, exactly. So is he younger than Kyle Quincy? Yeah, but Kyle Quincy, you signed for a year, and okay, you got Dalton Prout out of it. Big whoop.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that one. Okay, the next one is Vanek to the Florida Panthers for Dylan McElrath and a conditional third. The interesting thing is, I get why Detroit did it. They only had him signed to this year. They took very little. McElrath probably never see Detroit, or if he does, he'll see it just on a very limited basis. But, Ant, I'm a little worried. I thought he was having a great season. He was a great fit in Detroit, Vanek.
Yeah.
Last night, I didn't even notice him, so I'm not sure about this trade.
I was about to say, I know it's first game and everything, and so I'm willing to sort of give him the benefit of the doubt in the first game.
Right.
But he was noticeably, with the exception of, I think, maybe one offensive zone foray where I noticed him. Here's the thing, the puck wasn't even on his stick on that. He was just the fact that he was in on a rush. Vanek, I'll give him a few games and everything. Again, the environment, I think, in Florida, especially with other Eastern European players, is certainly a good thing in this game. But Vanek is so Americanized at this point, you know, that I don't know if it necessarily matters in that respect. But from the flip side of that, for Detroit, again, the assets that they got in return in terms of picks, I certainly like. McElrath, again, going to be a guy that he's certainly going to be, I think, on the AHL-NHL shuttle. I think he'll see more action in the NHL. I do think there's a chance of that. But, again, he's at this point of his career, McElrath reads me. The one thing I will say about McElrath, to be completely fair in this case, is that he is a good he is a defenseman who will compete. He will play physical at something on the Red Wings blue line that they do, that I think is needed on their blue line. But he is, despite his size, he is very limited. They're going to have to pretty much use him as a number six, and then pray that nobody pinwheels him. The guys in front of him at that point, because I think he's a guy that you could easily get around, because he just lateral movement wise, it's just, you know, a good skill forward can just completely abuse him.
Mike.
I mean, after they lose Marchenko in waivers, they trade Brendan Smith to the Rangers. I mean, McElrath has an opportunity here, I think, to like earn that bottom pairing spot. And, you know, he's under control for more than a few years, whereas Vanek is an asset that they apparently wanted to sign to an extension, but I don't know if they wanted to sign him for any more than a year. I mean, the one thing I'm a little scared about in terms of Vanek going to Florida is he was a top six guy in Detroit. He was playing on the power play. He was playing with Anthony Mantha at the Centennial Classic. I think he was playing with Mantha that game, Russ.
He was.
And in Florida, he's probably going to be a maybe a third line guy and probably second power play at best. So he's not going to have the opportunity that he had in Detroit.
No, and I think that's what we're maybe noticing, but we'll see. We'll give him a little time. All right, this is a very minor trade, but I think this was actually significant. Tampa trading Adam Wilcox to Florida for Mike McKenna. Look, Mike McKenna goes straight to Syracuse. No shock there. But Florida gets a goalie who still has some prospect and, you know, some really prospect upside to him. We saw him in the Frozen Four here when he played for Minnesota, had Brady Shea on his team.
Yeah.
He's a pretty good goalie with some size, and I think this is a real nice pickup for Florida, because they don't really have anybody in their system.
Yeah, exactly. That's the issue there, is the fact that, again, we watched Luongo get hurt again last night. He does have a history. They have Reimer, obviously, on a long-term deal. But Reimer is, you know, he's a tweener in terms of being an NHL starter and a backup. So having a guy in the pipe like Wilcox, I think, is actually a pretty solid move. Tampa knew, you know, obviously, being in Tampa's system, the fact that he's just too many guys to get over, and obviously Vasilevsky is the anointed goalie there. So I think it's actually, when I saw that trade, I was like, that's a solid move. And again, Wilcox, we're going to see as he continues to move along. He's got certainly a college level in pros before he showed his capabilities. But again, it's good. It's just like any goaltender, you got to take your time with them, try to get them together. It's a big jump. And do I think he's got the capability of doing it? I do. And I think Florida certainly, and he may have a little, he's going to have a probably even more motivation. I mean, he should always have motivation, period. But I think he'll have a little bit of motivation knowing that there will be a potential opportunity with the big club.
Mike?
Well, I mean, I think Wilcox was probably less favored by Tampa Bay than Gudlevskis, who I think, you know, Gudlevskis is going to end up being, you know, the number two. You know, they trade Bishop, and we know Vasilevsky is going to be the number one. So I think Gudlevskis is going to fill in as the backup. So if they made a determination that, you know, Gudlevskis was probably on a better track than Wilcox, that's probably why they moved on from him.
All right, so this one I'm going to read two trades because I think Montreal got unfairly beaten down on this because they didn't get the scorer that everybody thinks they should get, but they got better. They traded Sven Andrighetto to Colorado for Andreas Martinsson, and they traded a fourth-round pick in 2018 for Dwight King. I mean, the King one's a brilliant trade because – you know, he had 11 points.
That's the one that I did like from them,
Yeah, he had 11 points for the Kings in their cup run. He at least has Stanley Cup background. He has experience. I think he can do a little bit, and he's tough. Martinsson is a big, tough guy, and so if nothing else, he's another one where if they're matching up against a certain team, they can bring him in. Andrighetto had become sort of a floater. He was supposed to be a good scorer. It hasn't really happened. I think Montreal did great here. I do.
In the event that if they're not going to add or not able to find that score that they were looking for in terms of adding a ton of grit, certainly I like King a lot. When I saw that they made the move for King, I was like, that was a smart, you know, lower grade move that, you know, they had to get big and tough. I mean, at the end of the day, as much as people want to, and I jokingly, you know, hashtag, because between that and then Steve Ott gets acquired, I'm like, I put hashtag grit on every move that Montreal was doing. But at the end of the day, it's been a conscious effort in terms of making sure that they make themselves a much more physically imposing team, whereas the guys they shipped off more on the certainly undersized, a guy like David Desjardins and Andrighetto, as you mentioned.
And they got
mentioned.
Davidson, another depth defenseman. That was good. Desjardins was not in their plan.
I thought Davidson was a good move. I think that was one of those moves before the deadline where I was like, I see the benefit for both teams because, again, Davidson, I think, on the long term, I could see him very easily paired with a Shea Weber. And really, I think that could potentially really feed off his skills a lot. And then from the other side, I thought the Oilers certainly getting a guy like Desjardins. Desjardins is a perfect third line center for a team like Edmonton coming forward. So, but I do like Martinsson as well. Again, the theme here is again bigger, stronger. When the games start to become more of a grind, when they get into the playoffs. And again, you know, this is a continued evolution for the Canadiens. They could very well figure out a potential big move in the offseason. If it wasn't at the deadline, there's still potentially other places to go. And again, I think they've got the right coach in there now. Do I sometimes think that we overrate Claude Julien a little bit, even though he's won a cup with Boston? I do think he could be a little overrated at times. I know people are excited about him there, but I do have a lot more faith in his coaching ability, certainly over the long haul, in terms of potentially Montreal getting over the top, than I did with them with Michel Therrien.
Well, here comes the counterpoint, Mike.
Michael.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any problem individually with the moves that the Canadiens made. I mean, as you said, King is a big guy. Martinsson can help them out. Ott, you know, the only thing I would say is call Montreal pest control for that team, because with Shaw, Gallagher, Ott, you got enough rats on that team. But the thing is Bergevin failed utterly to make the move he needed to make. This team right now is all on the shoulders of Carey Price and, to a lesser extent, Shea Weber to get deep into the playoffs. And, you know, that's all they've done the last 3 or 4 years. They don't score enough goals. And they rely on Carey Price, and they're continuing to do that. Maybe that's what they had. Maybe that's the only option open to Bergevin. But honestly, I think they're going to fall short because he didn't do his job.
Okay. I want to say I felt like the trade of the day was, I'm looking, there's a couple I like. I'm going to say it was when Vancouver traded Hanson to the Sharks for Goldobin and a conditional fourth. And I'll tell you why. Hanson's never been a finisher. He's a fast guy, but he's just a guy that just he's like Russ Courtnall. He's all over the place. And Goldobin could be there maybe for the next 10 years if he fits in. He's a smart guy. He's got wheels. He's got definite goal-scoring ability. And so I think Vancouver, you know, they got him. They got Dahlin, who I think Dahlin is a heck of a prospect, and in a couple of years could be at least a third-line guy to start and maybe a second-line guy. He could score. He could set up guys. Mm-hmm. And this was a good day for Vancouver. And, you know, the Sharks, man, they got another player, but this was a good day for Vancouver.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly, in my mind, between the two moves, the Dahlin for Burrows move was a fantastic move, I think, for the for Vancouver, getting a guy like Dahlin in their system.
And Ottawa was happy. He scored twice, Burrows.
Yeah, but listen, at the end of the day, again, it's a now trade for Ottawa as they're trying to get themselves into the postseason. And again, but they've added guys that they feel like, again, I've never been a Victor Stahlberg guy, but I was certainly okay with them acquiring Burrows. I think he fits in particularly well with the way they want to play. But then again, for everybody who maligned Jim Benning for the last 2 years, or you know, for some of the moves he's made, this week they're singing his praises, and understandably so. Now, again, Goldobin, great puck skills. The big question again is that, and I've seen this as well, and I agree with it, is the fact that he can be a bit on the indifferent side sometimes when it comes to his physical engagement along the boards. He can be a bit of a perimeter player, so either he continues to work in that area in terms of the engagement, being able to get into 30 yards, or Vancouver better figure out how to balance his skills as a perimeter player with guys who are going to be able to physically engage, and then you can maximize his puck skills. But in terms of overall skill sets of the two players they acquired for Vancouver, I think both moves were very good and a positive step in the as they get closer and closer to the end of the Sedin era and they begin to bridge to the next era.
Mike?
I give Benning all the credit in the world for these two deals. I think they were smart. I think that Dahlin is a very good prospect. Getting Goldobin back for Hanson, I think, is a good move. But I'd give him more credit if he hadn't wasted a ton of money signing a 31-year-old Louis Erickson in the offseason last summer. I mean, now they're finally on the track that I think everybody thought that they should be on the last 2 or 3 years. But I don't know if it was ownership or if it was Benning's decision, but they, you know, all of a sudden have done a complete 180, and I think it's good, but they should have done that a couple of years ago.
Okay. I want to let people know we might go 5 minutes in overtime, come back. You could hear the end. It might get a little lively towards the end. A quick one. Dallas trades will do you to the Blackhawks for McNeil and a fourth. McNeil, I think, has a chance to be a Lindy guy. If Lindy's around next year, he could possibly play fourth line. He's good on draws. He's tough. He's not going to be the scorer, I don't think, you know, that people thought he would be when he got drafted, but that's what happens to players sometimes. I don't worry about if you're a first rounder or a fourth rounder or a seventh rounder. Mm-hmm. But I think Dallas recouped here pretty well, and of course Chicago gets better.
No, I completely agree with that. And in Chicago, again, they're in win. They will remain in win now mode for quite a few, obviously for the next few years. And again, yeah. Chicago's being a bit on the thin side, adding a guy like Oduya, who's already familiar with the system. It's just a matter of plug and play. Again, I like that move certainly from Chicago's perspective. And again, Dallas is, as they're going along here, they're trying to fill in here as they go along with players that they're with the players that they're adding, certainly with the moves that they made. So again, solid move I think for both ends.
Mike?
Well, if you look at the Blackhawks defense now going into the playoffs, Oduya and Yarmolson as their second pairing, now Brian Campbell and TVR on their third pairing. This is the best their defense has been I'd say in 3 or 4 years,
that's
the
true.
Deepest it's been. So I mean, it was a good move. They got Dallas to eat half the salary. You know, I know Aduya is coming off an ankle injury. They can even take it easy on him in terms of not playing him a ton of games down the stretch because they're probably locked into either first or second in the Central. So it's a good, solid move, and Dallas got something for it. But I'm worried about the Blackhawks again.
Okay. This one will be very quick. Detroit trades Brendan Smith to the Rangers for the third-round pick in 2017 and a second round in 2018. That's Rangers has still have one second rounder in 2018. My basic thought is Brendan Smith just is a guy that doesn't do well with the forecheck. He takes bad penalties. He does have NHL experience. He can skate well. He's not going to give you much offense. He's a number seven. Patrick O'Sullivan was like the only person of the day who said that he was the Rangers' seventh defenseman. He said it on Sirius. He's right, because when everybody comes back, he will be the odd man out, but he gives – if he's healthy, because he has a knee injury, correct? This is just, you know, a minor move, but, you know, a lot of fans get rubbed the wrong way because of the 1 second being gone. They don't have a second this year, and they can envision the other second for next year being gone by next year. But end of the day, they got an NHL defenseman. I was just, you know, that's all I could say.
But it is, again, certainly in this draft, a second-round pick may not necessarily have the same weight as prior years, but you know, but we know how we are with that in terms of, I think there's been a little too much. There's been a little too much downgrading on this draft.
It's a third rounder
this
year.
So. Yeah, it'll be a third rounder this year, but again, that's still a useful part. That still would end up at the end of the day being a useful part for a depth defenseman. But again, it shows a little bit of a lack of trust also in what they have in Hartford too. That, you know, they felt that was necessary. And that becomes a bit of an indictment on the Rangers' depth, in-system depth, that they felt that they needed to release, a pick in this case to acquire. But again, I do get it. Once you get in the postseason, you do want an NHL-level defenseman who has postseason experience and a guy like Smith. But as you said, he's a guy who is very exposable in terms of his limitations and the fact that he does take penalties. That could be that could potentially be a liability if he's playing a regular shift come playoff time.
Mike?
Yeah, I mean, I think it solidifies that bottom part of the Rangers defense. I mean, Girardi is injured, but he's supposedly going to come back fairly quickly. But the Clendenning, Holden. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Smith is a decent ad for that. Plus, I think that they may have aspirations to sign him before he gets the free agency, probably because he wouldn't cost a lot, and I think they want to probably move on from Klein. So I think they give up a little too much, but I think if they sign him, it's not a terrible deal.
Okay. All right, so this one, this is the big one that takes a minute to digest, and actually there's a part of it that I don't think was very well talked about. So when the Blues traded Shattenkirk and Phoenix Copley to the Caps for 2017 first-rounder, conditional draft picks, and Zach Sanford and Brad Malone, you look at that and you say, I got to tell you something. The Capitals not only get Shattenkirk, they got a good goalie. They're loaded with goalies to begin with.
Yeah.
And
Copley
they got a goalie for nothing.
Yeah, they got. When I saw the Copley part of things, I was like, they may have also just acquired the backup for a pretty good one, I think. Although I know he got hurt tonight, so you got to keep an eye, obviously, on Copley. That's the one thing that's kind of held him back at times is injuries. But when I saw Copley was included in the deal, I was like, that ends up being a pretty good deal here because I also think the Caps did that. With the knowledge that they know it's a 50-50 or maybe even less than that prospect that they're going to be able to bring Shattenkirk back. So at the minimum, Copley you got a controllable guy again in Copley for your other return here. So really, if you kind of break the deal down, they're pushing for now with Shattenkirk, but I don't know if the Caps are confident in this case that they're going to be able to keep him this offseason. It's going to be tough. I mean, certainly where they're at. But again, if they let some of their free agents go, they potentially could if they really like him. And again, it's tough to find a right shot.
And Sanford will play for
St.
Louis. He's a pretty good player.
And Sanford will certainly play for St. Louis. I think he'll end up eventually probably hanging on their fourth, in their bottom six
mm-hmm.
before long.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll go from there. But I had the same impression when I saw Copley. I was like, that's an area in the system that they certainly need going forward. And again, they still have obviously the
other Samsonov in Russia
as well. But again, he's in Russia, so it may take a while, obviously, before he finally makes the jump over here. So at the very least, Copley provides at least a backup bridge for as long as Holtby is physically capable, certainly, of handling the load that he's had.
Mike?
Well, Grubauer is a pretty good candidate to possibly go to Vegas because,
mm-hmm.
yep. I mean, I'm sure McPhee knows him from Washington, and he's right age, right cost. It would make sense. And, Copley has had a couple cups of coffee in the NHL. He's only 25 years old. So, yeah, I think they might have gotten their backup. And, I mean, the St. Louis goaltending situation is so screwy, because Binnington probably mm-hmm. should be ahead of him. I don't know if
mm-hmm.
this is just a statement that Binnington is ahead of him because they gave up Copley. The other thing about Shattenkirk is add him to the complete kerfuffle that the Capitals have right now because Alzner's a UFA, Orlov's an RFA,
mm-hmm.
Carlson's a UFA next year, and now you add Shattenkirk to it. They can only sign two of those guys. I can't see them signing three, and definitely not four.
Nope, that's totally fair. So now we get to the portion of the evening where, I think we all said that what we'd like for some trades and others. Some you don't know if they win or lose till they're down the road. But there was definitely one clear loser, and that was Garth Snow and the New York Islanders because they didn't get anything done. And the fans are mad, understandably. The people are scratching their head a little bit. They're losing tonight to Chicago. They're, holding on to your life for their wild card spot, and they didn't improve. And they still have, Ryan Pulock is still in the minors. They didn't even elevate him. They did elevate Josh Hosang, but I don't know if that's enough.
No, I don't think it's enough at all. And I know there was some whispers maybe that they would be the team that would try to jump in on the Matt Duchene sweepstakes.
Mm-hmm.
But again, as we all know, once we saw some of the trades that were going down, what the cost was going to be for Duchene, probably, and I'm not surprised at all that Duchene didn't move, but at least you figure they would have potentially been involved in at least one offensive upgrade. And again, whether that speaks to whether or not Garth is just he's kind of treaded water for the last several years. Terms of thinking, I've got guys in. I've got a postseason team that's, looks like it's going to be a postseason contender. I'm going to try to slow play this. But at the end of the day, we don't. The situation with the Islanders is what it is. And I think after last offseason, when Shane Prince was the only, at the best, the only
mm-hmm.
acquisition of note. And I do like Prince as a depth forward, but.
Mm-hmm.
They needed a little bit more. They certainly, after last offseason, when they lost some of the players, they needed a little bit more. And, Garth was not able to deliver the goods. And, again, I think that's going to end up being to the Islanders' detriment.
Mike?
Well, I mean, they should have made a move for a forward. They do have the highest paid fourth line in hockey with Cizikas, Clutterbuck, and Kuhlman. So maybe they couldn't afford it under their budget. The funny thing is they earn a point tonight. They move ahead of Toronto into the second wild card. They're in this race. He should have done something. I mean, Radim Verbata was out there. Probably wouldn't have cost him a ton, although they're saying Chyka is asking him for a first-round pick, which is a sure sign of his insanity.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, there had to be a forward or two out there that could have given them a little help that probably wouldn't have cost them a ton. But Garth just didn't want to bite on something little, and he couldn't make anything big happen. So they may rue the day, because if they miss the playoffs by a point or two, they're going to point their fingers at Garth.
Yeah, I mean, if nothing else, I go back to, hey, they could have gotten Drew Stafford for a sixth. He's played with Andrew Ladd. Maybe that would have been a good pairing, but what do I know? I did leave out the Jerome McGinley because that was an interesting one. Joe
mm-hmm.
Sakic did the right thing here. He gets conditional fourth, but really they did the right thing for McGinley. The interesting thing was, and when I looked up stats the night before, that, again, there's just six goals behind Joe Sakic, so Sakic's literally trading a guy that's going to pass him on the all-time goals list. I'm sure of that. I don't know what year, whether it's this year or next year, and it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's a little interesting. It makes for more of, it's more of an interesting curiosity, a little bit of an interesting wrinkle. But in terms of, you know, he didn't do it. And it is kind of funny to say, well, he made sure to get rid of him before he did it in an Avalanche uniform. But at the end of the day, again, Iggy has been basically put it out there for the last month or so that he wanted to move on to a contender. And again, LA I think is a perfect spot for him. Again, they have the depth in the system in terms of what they have in their lineup, and again, his style of play. Even though obviously he is slowed up in recent years, I still think he's going to have useful utility for the Kings in the postseason if they make it.
Mike,
it's going to take him a little while to fit into with the Kings, because yesterday in his first game he was playing center on the second power play. I'm like, the first time I ever seen Jerome McGinley taking a faceoff. I mean, you know, and it was weird. He was playing on the top line with Gabarek and Kopitar. I just don't think that's the role for him. If he's a third line guy, second power play guy, I think he can help them. If they give him, you know, 15, 16 minutes a night, expect him to be Jerome McGinley a few years ago, I think they're asking for too much.
All right, this is a point where, and you guys don't know this is coming, we'll get like 20 seconds to talk about something that affected us. So I'll start. Actually, I watched the Princeton-Colgate game tonight. Princeton lost 3-2 in overtime. Interesting game. They have a couple more games, maybe. Tomorrow could be the end. And Ed Cranepool needs a kidney transplant, and that's a guy who I grew up really, really liking, one of the Miracle Mets, and so I'm hoping that he gets better. Now, Ant, my question to you is, did you fist pump for the coin flip?
Talk about for the Eagles coin flip?
For the coin flip for the Philadelphia Eagles. You won the coin flip.
God,
did you
no.
fist pump for that?
God, no. Oh, my God. No. I saw the Howie picture. I'm like, yeah, I'm happy for Howie and everything, but come on. It's like, no, I'm not playing. You know, please. It's nice to say congratulations. You got the 14th pick. That's awesome sauce. But, you know, there was way too much. I saw the coin for it, and I was like, are you serious? Can we just get a goddamn quarter out, please, and just flip the goddamn coin, heads or tails? I mean, for real. I saw the coin with the Vikings.
I think they're
going to
put a big sign up on 95 for the draft.
Oh, my God. I saw the two coins. I was like, this is the coins of the Eagles and Vikings. And it's like, stop. This is ridiculous. Get a goddamn quarter out. Or give me a silver dollar if you really want to go, or a gold dollar. All right, if you really want to make it. No, we have to mint a coin for this. Oh, there's a reason why the NFL. Oh, my God. No, I didn't. Obviously, I didn't have fist pump. I went on with my day. Thank you.
Okay, fair enough. Mike, you saw Steve Hackett tonight, of GTR fame, but really more of Genesis. I'm having fun with you, and you know, give us an idea of how Steve has aged and how he's doing.
I mean, he looks great. I think he's 65 or 66. Yeah. He looks great. You know, I'm sure he's using some Just for Men because he's still got his dark hair. but it was an impressive night. He played with the Buffalo Philharmonic, and they played a lot of old Genesis tunes. And it, you know, those songs lend themselves to sort of an orchestral set playing with them. So it was really, really interesting. The only thing that I took of a negative tinge was the lead singer didn't sound anything like Gabriel or Collins, so that was a little distracting. But it was, all in all, it was a great show, and I completed the set of, you know, I've seen Gabriel, I've seen Collins, Rutherford Banks, now I've seen Hackett, so I can die a happy man.
All right, well, hopefully you'll be around for next show. We we hope everybody's enjoyed our our trade deadline. I've done too many shows this week. I really have.
Yeah.
I've spoken as much as Anthony this week. My voice is tired.
Did you just say that you talk more than me this week? That is a physical impossibility,
that.
Cohen. Complete physical impossibility, you yakhead on you.
That's it for Off the Post. I'm done. See ya.
Take care, everybody.
It's in here somewhere.
You know, there is an easier way to read your energy meter.
Yeah?
Yeah. Eon's new self-reading smart meters. They automatically send us your reading for you.
Really?
Really. And lets you know the exact cost of the energy you've used.
Even better. So no more...
unpleasant surprises?
New self-reading smart meters from Eon. Search Eon tomorrow. Tomorrow is on. Eligibility criteria, terms and conditions apply.